Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Welcome to my broadcasting table. Donna Sebo here. Well, are you ready for a little bit of the paranormal, mystery, intrigue, diabolical thinking? Well, if you'd like to start your day off with those kinds of positive notes, we've just got what you've needed right here. We're going to be talking with Peter David Shapiro, Portrait of Ignatius Jones. A portal to the other side. Hi, Peter. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna. Thank you.
Well, I understand you're up to your earlobes in snow back there in the East Coast with all of this blizzard activity that's going on. How are you faring?
Oh, well, I've got a lot of exercise shoveling, so there's a bright side to it.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't it amazing when Mother Nature decides to do her number? She lets us know who's really in charge, doesn't she?
That's right. Yes, right. You can't do anything about it. You just wait till the storm is done, and then you get out there and try to get back to normal. But yeah, when it comes down, you have to just hunker down and wait for it to end.
And this is a great time to read, to be able to just sort of zone out, if you will, when you have this kind of weather. Because you really can't be out and about doing much of anything. And I just think it is, in a sense, it is like a reprieve from the hectic, busy world that we live in. And a book like yours, Portrait of Ignatius Jones, it is terrific. I was really fascinated with it. Now, Peter, you have written other books, The Trail of Money and then Ghosts on the Red Line, which I remember we chatted about, what was that, 2 years ago that we chatted about that book?
I think so, yes.
And you were, I think, at that time, already beginning to write The Portrait of Ignatius Jones. Now, this is woven with such unique patternings of the paranormal. And this is something I have to ask you. What spurred you to do this? What was it that made you so intrigued with this thought process of the paranormal to be woven into this fabric of human characters and personalities that were, well, able to stand on their own, but they were doozies.
This particular story came to me by actually walking through our museum, especially the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston, and looking at the portraits of people down there in the museum. There are many of the portraits, especially the ones which are wonderfully done. The subjects in the portraits, they're more than just images of people. They have tremendous personality. And they have attitude in some cases. You can see there are different kinds of people, and they generally stare out at you, the viewer walking through the gallery. And at least it started me wondering, looking at them as they stared at me, you know, what were they thinking when their portrait was being made by the artist, and what kind of people were they really, and what was the nature of their time? And it almost seemed to me as looking at me, that they were trying to communicate through the medium of the artist, trying to communicate with the viewer across centuries. I mean, they're otherwise, many of these people are, you know, long gone, disappeared from memory, but their personality was captured, has been captured in these portraits. And I was thinking, well, what if someone's personality, they actually could communicate. They could reach you through their portrait. And that's the beginning of the thinking that led to Portrait of Ignatius Jones, in the case in which, in fact, the person being who was being painted, who was art portrait was being taken, was a leading psychic of his time, the end of the 1800s. And he intentionally caused his portrait to serve as a medium, as a portal for when he passed passed on.
Yes, in fact, at the very beginning of your book, there's a testimony of a Miss Eugenia Stevenson concerning a Boston Spiritualist Lyceum. Ah, yes, we start off with that. And just as you've said, this was a story that evolved from something that you were experiencing when you actually were in the environment of these wonderful portraits, which at the time they were done, they really were the equivalent of photographs. They were depicting lifestyle and so many other things. And those painters that really were highly skilled, they did actually bring out the persona of that person that was posing for them. And it's an amazing thing. You can discern a lot about an individual. And again, if the painter was really skilled, you'd find it in the creases of the eye, whatever. There was just this that radiated there. And Ignatius, and this is part of what the beginning of the story of Ignatius Jones is all about. He says, by sheer force of will, I invest in this object a portion of my aura, of my very self, so that it will forever remain a part of me and I of it. Now, that is, you know, you think about the Native Americans, and so many times when photographers came along and the Indians would say, I don't want my photograph taken because you'll take a part of my soul. So that is what came into my mind when I started reading this, how photographs do capture essences of people, just like portraits do. And it's an intriguing position to put a story in. And of course, Ignatius said, those who possess the gift of sensitivity will feel my presence in this very portrait, and they will hear my voice. Ooh, this is the type of thing you want to have a hot cup of cocoa and some cookies and just sit down and get into this book. It is wonderful as a read. Now, you stage this. Here you start in the late 1800s, and then you move forward into 2009. Whoa, what a shift. That is a huge shift. And here is this painting, and it had sort of disappeared. Nobody knew where it was. So there's another mystery that has evolved. Okay, so with this painting, nobody knows anything about it. Nobody, I mean, lots of time has passed. 1896, over 100 years. And here we pop into 2009. Boy, that was quite a time span, quite a time span to go through.
That's right. What happened was Ignatius Jones is murdered. And there's a reason for it, and the story says why he is murdered in 1903, and then his portrait is stolen the night he's murdered, and is gone the next day when the police go to his apartment. And it turns up in Vermont at a rummage sale, and there's a reason why it takes that long. I mean, it's been a family has held onto it, and nobody knows really the connection to Ignatius Jones. It's just been kept in an attic in Vermont. And it surfaces in a rummage sale in 2009. And it's purchased by a con artist named Charles Philip Tucker. And it turns out that Charles Philip Tucker, unbeknownst to himself, is receptive to this portrait. And he gets a big shock after he starts to look at it more intensely.
Well, there's also this little girl, Lily. Now, this is interesting because it had been in this family. You just mentioned the family. It had been in this family for multiple generations. And when we're in 2009, the family that had it, the wife didn't like it at all. Not at all. And the couple had a little girl by the name of Lily. But boy, she was just a little tiny person when her dad showed her the picture, and there was this instantaneous connection.
All right. Clearly, it was speaking to her. She was only 3 years old, and something—it was connecting with her in a way that her parents had no understanding. They just saw this little kid who was a happy, cheerful little kid suddenly go wild and screaming to be brought closer to the painting. And once she was able to touch it, she calmed right down. But she clearly something was connecting with her.
It's really quite a very interesting story that you have here. Now let's talk about this family that has this, because the dad passes away. Mom couldn't stand the picture. But years have gone by again. So here you have this unique situation where mom decides she's going to sell it. And her daughter is older now. Her daughter is how old? A teenager? Early
She's
teens?
a
Middle
teenager. She's
teens?
around 16 or 17,
Ah, okay.
and she's working as a on one of the resorts near here called near Boston called Block Island, off the coast of Rhode Island, the Atlantic, and she's working on Block Island at one of the inns there, the resorts, and so she's away. And her mother back in Vermont sees this as an opportunity to get rid of the painting along with other stuff that she has at the church rummage sale where she's participating in the rummage sale, and this is one of the things that she wants to sell. She wants to get this painting out of her house because it's very spooky
She doesn't
to
like
her.
it at all. She
She doesn't
doesn't
like
like
it,
it.
no.
Not at all. Now let's talk about Mr. Tucker. This is a character. Like you said, he's a con man. And this guy was always a shyster on one level or another. And he happens to see this painting for sale and he decides to buy it. And of course, it doesn't cost him much of anything. But he decides to do some research, and here we are in this era where you can research things on the internet, etc. And when he sees a signature of the artist and that it was done in 1896, that really grabs his attention because he knows it's well over 100 years old. And that begins a journey for him that he never in a million years would have expected could happen to him.
Right. No, he discovers that, as you say, doing the internet research, that this painting was quite a special painting, and the artist was a well-known artist of the time. And of course, he wasn't an art expert himself, but he could tell that something was valuable, and interesting, and so he learned about it on the internet, and then of course he wants to check it out and make sure that it's a real painting and not a forgery. And so he takes it down to Boston to have it looked at by an art expert who is recommended to him by one of his former colleagues from Wall Street for art which is obtained by perhaps less than normal means. I mean, this fellow, Denny Sullivan, looks at art that people have bought on the black market or this gray market, and so he but he's pretty good. He's a pretty good expert at looking at these things, and he tells Charles that this painting does look real and it's definitely old, and if it's what it looks like, it's quite valuable, which Charles is happy about.
There are perspectives in this story that I find so intriguing. And one of them that you bring out is about a character, and it's Dr. Frances Gormelin. And she uses all kinds of crystals. I mean, you really did a lot of research on various components of association that people will use to be able to work with different energies. Did you have fun when you were writing this?
I did. Yes, I did. And Dr. Gormelin, I first met Dr. Gormelin in Ghosts on the Red Line. As you recall, that was a story of people were seeing their departed on the subway trains in Boston.
That's right.
And it was causing a big fuss in Boston when this happened. And Dr. Gormelin, who is a well-known psychic medium in Boston, hears about it and introduces herself to the consultants who are trying to figure out for the transit authority what's going on. And she says, I can help you. And so that's how I met her. I created her and met her then. And I took a fondness to her. I liked her. And so I made her the main protagonist in this story. She gets involved in Portrait of Ignatius Jones. It's because one of the what Charles Philip Tucker decides is he's going to invite psychics from around the country, around North America, to come and see the portrait and pay to be in contact with the portrait, pay him, and a center that he sets up. So, and she's invited to come to see it, and then she gets involved in what's going on at the Ignatius Jones Center for Spiritualist Discovery, which he has created in Vermont.
Well, Charles ends up with more than he ever imagined that he would have to handle. And actually, he put the painting and the story in his basement, and he leaves it on an easel, and he keeps it covered because he's having these strange experiences when he looks at the portrait. I mean, he is asking himself the questions, what was the man thinking when the artist was painting him? What went on with him? This was creating a shift in his mind. And as you said, he was sensitive and he didn't realize the entire story about Ignatius Jones and this painting. And yet you have Frances, and she is someone that decides she's going to go to see what's happening. And oh my goodness, the plot thickens, but Charles goes through a major transformation with this. I mean, after all, he is a con artist, but there's another side of him that evolves that is very, very interesting.
Yes, I think, you know, he usually works with two sort of partners in their various schemes. One of his partners named Buddy Choate, who's kind of like the muscle with his group, and then Murray Gaddis, who is more of a planner and an operational guy, and they do their schemes together. So they create this place in Vermont for the portrait, and they're thinking of it primarily as a con game.
Mm-hmm.
But Charles is taken up by it. The more the voice talks to him, the more he's sort of drawn in, and it really takes over his mind, and he comes under its control. His personality changes as Ignatius Jones, he hears the voice of Ignatius Jones, and he starts to do things that he wouldn't have done in his normal, with his normal personality.
And there's the statement in there, religion makes good money. So
right.
That's
where they start.
Yeah, so they've set this up, so they really want to see the dollars rolling in. And actually, they do start rolling in. Because it is a situation where a lot of the psychics are going to want to be there and other people as well. In fact, what is so intriguing is the synchronicity and the coincidences that bring Lily, the young girl who at 3 years of age saw the portrait and had such a strong association with the portrait, and her family didn't understand it at all, but she really had a connection with Ignatius Jones. And then here she is, she leaves home, she finds out her mother has sold this painting, and she learns that this painting really is in a place very close by. And she ends up going there.
Right. She discovered once the center, this Ignatius Jones Center for Spiritualist Discovery is founded in Vermont, which is in her town, in fact. She hears about it, and when she hears about it, then she goes and applies for a job to work at this center as one of the assistants there. They call them spiritualist helpers. And she did that because she wanted to be close to the portrait again. She wanted to see it again. That was something that she really felt missing from her life once after her mother sold it. So that's what holds her in the center. She can tell she's a smart person. She can tell things are a little bit are very strange in some respects in this center. But she's there because she wants to be close to the portrait.
Absolutely true. And Frances, just as in the previous story, though she is a sensitive, she's a very intelligent sensitive, and she recognizes things for what they really are. But she also knows that there's more behind what's happening than the eye can see. And she is very attached to Lily, and she gets very concerned with her. But this organization ends up growing into something quite sizable, and the community that they move into really doesn't know what to do about it. They are sort of caught between a rock and a hard spot. And then there is a discovery about a book of Ignatius Jones.
That's right. What's happening is that Ignatius Jones' voice is speaking to Charles Philip Tucker, and Charles Philip Tucker hears that he is going to be the messenger for Ignatius Jones, and as messenger, he starts to write down the words that are dictated to him, and these words are formed into a book called the Book of Ignatius Jones, and that becomes kind of their Bible. In the center, and they so that's the subject that they study. And it's really Ignatius Jones' story of how he came to have the portrait taken of himself, and also what he wants Charles Philip Tucker to do, and what he wants the center to do. So Tucker starts taking instruction, and also Lily gets involved in this, and some of his helper Buddy Choate. They start taking instruction from the words, which end up as chapters in the book. And the book becomes sort of like a governing text or scripture for the center. And of course, as you said, the village that they're in, they're very concerned when they understand that the purpose of the center is to enable people to communicate with the other side through this portrait. This is somewhat upsetting to them. They think it's very strange, and they fear that what's being created in the midst of their little Vermont village is a cult, and they further think that this is a cult because the staff, including Lily and the other young people who work in the center, are told not to communicate with other people, with the outside world anymore. They're supposed to be very, very secretive, and this is one of the behaviors that people fear of cults. The young people are attracted in, and they're cut off from their families. So they get agitated about this, and so as they get more agitated, there's a paranoia grows amongst Charles and the people who work for him in the center that they feel that they're going to be attacked, and they start to take measures to defend themselves. And so things start to get more difficult for them and more dangerous.
Well, there are so many twists and turns in this story, and I think it is so intriguing. And I love the character of Frances because she is someone that is not afraid to look at the facts. And she manages to play a role of detective without being detected, even though Buddy and some others don't really feel like she can be trusted. She manages to hide what she is seeking and be able to interact with Lily because she's very concerned with Lily as well as some other young people. And then she learns a number of things. And of course, we're not going to give that away. But what is so interesting is how the story ends up evolving into, I would think, a genealogy specialist's dream. It's like you have to research things to find out what the connections really are. And the connections go back over 100 years. And this is part of what comes out as well. But Lily ends up finding out so much about herself. Frances is able to answer a lot of questions. You know, when you did this, and as you were finishing up this book, The Portrait of Ignatius Jones, what was it that you were feeling when you wrote this? Because this has so much of an emotional spectrum within the story, so many unique personalities that people, when they read it, they might say, wow, this sounds very similar to this thing that I read about or this that's happened in the past. When you finished with this, do you feel like this is the end of Ignatius, or is there something else that's going to be evolving with him?
Right now, I don't know. I am working on another project, and at the moment, it doesn't involve either Dr. Francis Gormelon or Ignatius Jones or the visitation rooms from the Ghost on the Red Line, but they, you know, who knows what's going to happen. The way I write, I'm not really sure where the book's going to end up, where the story's going to go. I keep on plowing forward and chapter by chapter, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know. But right now, I don't have plans to visit with them again. But who knows? Maybe they'll come back. I like Frances Gormelon, and I'd like to have more involvement with her, but I'm not sure.
I have to smile when I'm listening to you talk about Frances and some of the other characters, because they do come alive when you're writing mm-hmm. about them, don't they?
Yeah, that's the fun part, is to get involved with them, and you want to stay true to them. You want to make sure that you have them speaking and acting in a way that would be, you know, right for them. And so you try to see the world through their eyes and be true to that. And I mean, Frances Gormelon, as you said, is a very smart person. She's very wily. And as she was in Ghost in the Red Line, she figures out ways to achieve her objectives. You know, she's formidable in how she does that. And I like that about her.
Now, so. Portrait of Ignatius Jones, I will give you a tip, those of you that are listening. The portrait does end up in a particular gallery on a certain floor, and it is absolutely adored by visitors, but you're going to have to find out all of the other twists and turns yourself by reading the book by Peter David Shapiro, because you'll enter into a portal to the other side through the portrait of Ignatius Jones. Now, Peter, people can go to your website, Peter D. Shapiro, Shapiro.com, correct?
That's correct. They can find all about the book there. Of course, if you just Google it, Portrait of Ignatius Jones, or my name, Peter David Shapiro, you'll find links to it. It's on Amazon, and it's paperback as well as all the ebook formats. Available basically in all the formats everywhere. But either peterdshapiro.com or just Google my name, Peter David Shapiro, or the book Portrait of Ignatius Jones, and it'll come up.
Peter, after writing this book about the paranormal, how did it affect your life and your thinking? Because you obviously did some research on various components of the story. How has that affected your life?
It was a project for me. And once I complete the project, I move forward. I went back to the MF, the Museum of Fine Arts, a few weeks ago, and it certainly affects the way I look at portraits. But, you know, I look at them even more intensely than I used to, and try to imagine, you know, what was going on with the subjects of the portraits. So that's one change. But otherwise, you know, one moves on, and I'm on my next project now.
And what is that going to be? Is that going to be something mystical? What is it going to entail?
Well, the interim title is Disappearance. That's the title. But I don't have the book yet to go with the title. So I have to write the book to fill in the bucket called Disappearance.
Well, that is another mystery. And Peter, you're very good with these. It's a delight to have you as a guest again. And be sure you let me know when your next book comes out. Because
thank you, Donna.
I love these unique twists and turns that you bring to the material. And it does leave you saying, what's on the next page? What did he come up with on the next chapter or within the next chapter? So it really is an adventure. And I think this is the time of the year just to curl up with a good mystery, a good book, and keep yourself warm and toasty while the storms are out there just blowing away. Thank you so much, Peter Shapiro, for being my guest. Your book, Portrait of Ignatius Jones, is wonderful. And for those of you listening, check out his website, peterdshapiro.com. Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Donna. Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure. This is Donna.